Welcome to the College Football Bros. I'm Michael Newman.
And I'm Trey Newman.
All right. Episode 3 of our coaching series takes us to the Big Ten, of course, now with 18 teams adding in Washington, Oregon, USC, and UCLA. And speaking of UCLA, we'll get right into it with number 18, Deshaun Foster. And this was, we both agreed on this one, Trey. He's been a coach for 11 years, 10 of them at UCLA, but it's just been primarily as a running backs coach. So he does not have the resume that you would look at and think, oh yeah, a big time Big Ten program is going to hire him as a head coach. I give UCLA a break for the hire because, of course, Chip Kelly left so late in the process that they probably didn't have a lot of great candidates. But yeah, it's just not a guy that I'm willing to vault on the list just based on my gut feeling or something like that.
Right. It's almost too bad that they're going into the Big Ten now, because I feel like maybe if they were in the Pac-12, he could invigorate them with, he could uplift recruiting, but this is a daunting task for him.
Yeah. And he might end up great, right? Like, just because his resume doesn't look like it, he should have this job. You know, it's so hard to predict that, who knows, but 18 for now.
Yep. All right. Number 17, Ryan Walters at Purdue. Only 1 year of experience now as a head coach, but 4-8. They lost a lot to the transfer portal this offseason. And, you know, his calling is the defensive side. And last year they were last in the Big Ten, giving up 30 points per game. They definitely need to show some progress this year before, you know, fans and media start to call for him to get the boot.
Okay. Number 16. Sorry, Michigan fans. We've got Sharon Moore. Personally, I don't put much stock into him being kind of the active head coach for some games last year, because it was still Harbaugh's team, Harbaugh's program. Harbaugh was still a head coach throughout the week of preparation. So I really honestly don't think being the coach for those few hours on game day makes much of a difference. And we talked about it at the time. The betting market didn't think so either. I think the first game, it was announced like the day before that Harbaugh was going to be absent. The point spread basically didn't move. So anyway, I do see him basically as a brand new head coach. And so I look at it as any new coordinator being, you know, hired as a head coach. It's an unknown. It's like, sure, it makes sense that he was promoted because he's done a great job as the offensive coordinator and offensive line coach. Players seem to like him, but he's still an unknown as a head coach.
Yeah. And it's not, again, we're ranking the coaches, not like the program. Like, Michigan is obviously, you know, better than that. But I agree.
And I will say recruiting, I like what he's, his sort of attitude and what he said so far about recruiting. We'll see if it, you know, if he can actually elevate things there, but we'll see.
Right. All right. David Braun, number 15 in Northwestern. And Michael, I don't know about you, but he was kind of a tough one to rank given, like, you know, it's just last year you could have made a case for him to be the national coach of the year, you know, going 8-5 with such little expectations after the Pat Fitzgerald firing. But the way I looked at it for this ranking is there's still the unknown. You know, we don't know how much of last season was just kind of the residual effect of the Fitzgerald era and coaching and maybe rallying around his firing. And, you know, because Braun has never been a head coach, and so now we're going to start to learn, you know, what he can do when he's in control of a program.
Yeah, might seem unfair. He's this low, given you just won Big Ten Coach of the Year. But I'm with you. I'm not buying it yet. I don't know. Okay, number 14, Greg Schiano at Rutgers took over. Of course, a horrible situation there. You know, Chris Ash did not leave him. did not leave the cupboard full. But he's, you know, I would say Schiano's done a pretty good job. They had a winning record last year for the first time in a decade. They bring back a lot this year, so could be another bowl this season. Like, it's not like he's hitting a home run like Lance Leopold at Kansas, but he's doing solid.
Yep, I agree. All right, number 13, Mike Loxley. He's rebounded after just such an awful start to his coaching career. And then at Maryland now, 3 straight bowl games, back-to-back 8-win seasons. I guess the thing for me with him is, you know, he's been there 6 years now, and I personally feel like he's hit his ceiling. It's it's hard for Maryland to win in the Big Ten, but, you know, he just had a record-breaking quarterback. I don't necessarily see how they're going to improve on 8 wins. And in Big Ten play, they're 15-32 under him. So still room for improvement.
That's a good stat there. Because when you look at the records, you're like, oh, Maryland, that's good. But 15-32, okay, that brings me down a little bit on him. Okay, number 12, Brett Bielema at Illinois. He had one good season there in 2022, very good season. They went 8-5, but it's been sandwiched between 2-5 and 7 seasons, which is fine, but nothing crazy. Then you look back at his time at Arkansas. I always say not as bad as people remember, but not great. And so that Wisconsin run keeps getting, you know, farther and farther in history. You know, every year we do this and you give him less and less credit for it. So, again, it's just, he's in this range where it's like, yeah, he's doing a good job, but I wouldn't put him top 10 in the Big Ten.
Nope. All right. Number 11, Kurt Cignetti. He's a good coach. One of the top group of five coaches, you know, previously. And so now we're just going to see if that translates to the power level. He's got a fun offense that he runs. He did an incredible job with James Madison in his first 3 years while they were FCS. They finished second, third, and third nationally. And then after that, he guided them to the FBS level without any problems. I mean, he got them ranked. They got game day to go there this past year, got them to their first bowl game. Tough place to win at Indiana, but I like the hire.
Yeah. Yeah. This 11-10-9, we were talking about it before the podcast. You could kind of put it in any order here. But number 10, we had Jed Fish at Washington. And he's only been a head coach for 3 years, of course, at Arizona. But it's hard to do better than he did in those 3 years. Took over a winless program and understandably struggled in year one, but then made a massive jump forward in year 2 to 5 and 7. Massive step forward this past year, year three. They went 10-3, finished in the top 15. He seems to do a good job in recruiting. He elevated Arizona's recruiting. So, the only thing preventing him from being higher on this list is just, I guess, longevity.
Yep. All right, number 9, PJ Fleck of Minnesota. And, you know, Fleck is solid, but I think you and I might agree on this, Michael. He's probably hit his ceiling at Minnesota, and it's not a bad thing. It's okay. I just think some of his shine is now gone. He's gone to a bowl game in 5 of 6 years, mixed in 3 9-plus win seasons in 7 years, and that's great at Minnesota. But now the challenge is he did that in a West division, and now they're coming off of a year where they were 6-7, where the offense and defense kind of took a dive. It just might be tougher sledding now going forward.
Yeah. He was higher a few years ago for sure. And just, I think after this past year and then what we project this upcoming season, just kind of trending a little bit downwards. Number 8, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State. I thought that was a great hire because he did a really, really good job at Oregon State, took them over when they were one of the worst Power 5 programs out there and just kind of slowly built them up. It wasn't a quick fix, but eventually, over his last 3 years there, 3 bowl games, a top 20 finish, 3 straight winning records in the Pac-12. He just seems like a very solid developmental coach. Like I think the floor is high with him.
Because like you watched Oregon State, and it wasn't like gimmicky. They just like you watch them, like they're a good team. Like offense sound, defense sound. It was pretty impressive. All right, number 7, Matt Rhule, Nebraska. When it comes to Nebraska, I think most of you know I'm pretty unbiased, I think level-headed with how I judge the Huskers. And I honestly think Rhule so far is doing a good job. It's only been 1 year, 5-7. People will say, oh, it looks like the same old Nebraska as it was under Frost, losing close games, turnovers. I get that. But he's, you know, the way I'm looking at it is he seems to say the right things. Other coaches and media speak very highly of him. And year one wasn't expected to be all that good anyways, especially with his track record. You know, as we know, the year one early year struggles for him. He did great recruiting this offseason, top 20 class, flipped a 5-star quarterback, you know, and like I mentioned, we as we know with Rhule, the results start later. So especially more in year three. So I think some of this race ranking is based on his historical success at Temple and Baylor and for just sure. kind of trusting the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if at the end of his Baylor tenure, he was probably considered a top 10 coach in the country. And
yeah,
you know, you kind of ignore the NFL, but yeah, is 1 year at Nebraska enough to really, you know, tank him that far? Probably not. I think seven or eight on this list is where he belongs. Because it's hard to put him ahead of number six, Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. This is one you just have to fight a bias, at least I do, with Kirk Ferentz, because I would not be excited for my team to hire him. Like, I'd much rather hire, I don't know, I guess right behind it, or Jonathan Smith, let's say, just because, you know, you're going to have at least a good offense. But you just can't argue with the results. Like, yeah, the offense has been terrible, but over the last 25 years, and in particular, like the last 6 years, they've been really good. Like, they're not fading. They've finished ranked five of the past six seasons. It's just, and Iowa, of course, is not a place that you can recruit top 20 talent, top 15 talent. So, the results are there. You just go look at Iowa's records the past 10 years,
crazy.
20 years, and you'll see why he's.
And especially when he sprinkles in a random, like, just incredible double-digit win year. It's pretty good. All right, number five, we've got Luke Fickle. Year one, so he's at Wisconsin, of course, and year one was definitely a disappointment, I would say, there. But he's just going to have to prove that, you know, they can transition from their historical smash mouth identity to a more open offense. At least that's what they're trying to do right now. I just saw that someone wrote, I had never seen it. Had you heard the dairy raid? That's pretty funny. That's
no, what what's that?
Instead of the air raid, the dairy raid. That's pretty clever. And, you know, as we know, though, anyways, with the transition like that, it doesn't happen overnight. So, and Ryan kind of was all over that last offseason. He wasn't buying the early Wisconsin hype. But all right, the way I look Ryan. At it, you can't deny Fickle's coaching from his days at Cincinnati. Like, he developed players, multiple NFL draft picks. He won multiple AAC titles. He got them to a New Year's Six Bowl, and then they were the first G5 team to make the playoff. Like, I'm still optimistic on Fickle. There was, you know, it went down a notch a little bit this year, but I'm still pretty bullish, I think.
Yeah, and he recruits. Like, that's a big thing, too. Okay, number four is Dan Lanning at Oregon. I think, you know, he inherited a very good program from Mario Cristobal, but he has quickly elevated it to, I think, a great program. They're so good in recruiting, both in the portal and high school. How much of that credit goes to Lanning and how much goes to NIL, you know, which is, I think, been a boon for the program? I don't know, but I give at least some of it to Lanning and his staff. And he also seems to have made some very good hires on the offensive side of the ball. They've just Dillingham and then now
Stein.
Yeah, Will Stein. From
Memphis. From previously, right?
Memphis or UTSA. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so the offense has been great. And it's just like, everything is good. These past 2 years, yeah, they've had some close losses to Washington and whatnot, but like the direction of the program just seems so great. I think they're going to be a national title contender for years to come. So I can't drop him lower than this, even though it's only a 2 year sample, but I also can't put him higher because it's a 2 year sample. You know, it's just, we need to see, or at least I need to see a little more before I put him ahead of coaches who have, you know, 5-10 years of success.
Yep. And one of those guys here, number three, a Lincoln Riley, USC. Michael, do you know his middle name is Michael? How about that?
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just, thanks to Wikipedia, I noticed that. Yeah. I think with Lincoln Riley and making this list, people are going to point to 8-5 year two at USC and the defense not good. But I'm not being short-sighted here. I mean, he's been a head coach for 7 seasons. 5 of them have had 10 or more wins. The 2 that were less, one was last year. Okay, not his best. The other was when they won 9 in 2020. And the only reason they won 9 was because it was a COVID shortened season. They didn't get to play the number of games. They were 9-2, finished sixth in the country. So he's coached three Heisman winners, which is just nuts. He was close on another one, won four straight Big 12 titles. He has an incredible offense every year. And yeah, I agree. The defense has let him down, but he's now addressed that with a staff overhaul. He's even picked up the recruiting at SC this offseason. Now he's got to prove his chops that he can, you know, lead the transition to the Big Ten.
Yep. I think that was a good summary there. But he has fallen behind number two, James Franklin at Penn State. And James Franklin, we may have said this before, but he's kind of my next Jim Harbaugh, like a guy that people love to call overrated, but I think is actually underrated generally. He's been really good for a long time. He's got Penn State pretty consistently winning 10 or 11 games in a really tough division. They've had a lot of really tough schedules. Had it been a 12-team playoff in his tenure there, they would have made four or five playoffs by now.
And he's going to be one of the biggest beneficiaries of that.
Potentially, yeah. And, you know, just because he hasn't been as good as Ohio State, that's a hard expectation to have, or he hasn't been as good as Harbaugh's recent Michigan teams, that doesn't mean he still can't be, you know, a top five coach nationally in the country. Like, if you want, I always have to bring this up. If you want more evidence of how great of a coach James Franklin is, Google Vanderbilt Football Reference. Click the first link and just look at all their records the past 50 years. And, you know, there's a couple seasons there that look a little different.
That's crazy. All right. Number one, Ryan Day. I don't think there's any way you can deny this. Every year they're elite, recruit at a high level. You know, last year was his worst season at Ohio State, going 11-2, and they were 11-0 going into the Michigan game. And that was a close loss. So, you know, he's been to three playoffs in 5 years. One, he lost a heartbreaker to Clemson in the semis, then lost in the national title to an all-time Alabama team. And then a couple years ago, they were a missed field goal away from beating Georgia and most likely winning the national title. So, like, I don't know. The best case you can make against him is he doesn't win the big one. But the way I look at it, you know, because he lost three straight to Michigan and hasn't won a natty, but my counter is that when you get to these matchups where it's like top three or four teams, like, someone has to lose, and they've just been, it's not like all these games they're getting their doors blown off. You know, there's been a couple bad ones, but
yeah,
it's just
not you saying that the not winning the big one, that just, again, reminded me of Jim Harbaugh. That's what they said.
Yeah,
not winning the, and also Kirby Smart, you know, for much of his early tenure, not winning the big one. I just think that's so overrated, not winning the big one. Like, especially when you're close, it's just like, there's so much randomness there.
And I'm so willing to bet that the Michigan luck there, like his luck against Michigan, is about to change, if probably this year.
I would probably agree.
So I'm not concerned about Day.
Okay. Well, there you have it. There's our Big Ten rankings. I think this list was not that hard. Like, there was only decisions for me. There was a lot of head-to-head decisions. It was kind of like, okay, Luke Fickell versus Kirk Ferentz, or I don't know, even one of them was lower on the list, Brett Bielema versus Mike Locksley. But I don't think anyone is like more than two spots away from where most people would rank them.
Yeah, I think it's a tight variance. I think the only one that people would struggle with is like Sharon Moore. It's like, what do you, you know, how are they judging them? But other than that, I agree. They're in like very, very tight bands. And like this year, in years past, we've had a tough call at 1-2 with Day and Harbaugh, but no drama really this year. And just overall, like, the Big Ten is very deep with coaches. Like, that top eight, you got like ending with Jonathan Smith, and
Jonathan Smith
is so good. And we're not even, and that's not that, you know, that's the top eight, not even considering what Sharon Moore, Kurt Cignetti, maybe Jed Fish, what they could potentially still do. So it's pretty deep.
So people hate, it seems like, maybe James Franklin and Lincoln Riley, like, am I right there? There's just this hate, maybe a strong word, but everyone thinks they are overrated or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
are I mean, I guess people are there, or would people make, I guess the only other one you can make an argument ahead of them, not, I mean, you can always make an argument, but Lanning, maybe people are just kind of immediately saying, hey, Lanning's got that rolling. Maybe people are saying he should be too. I don't know, but let us know.
Right. You can
tweet us at CFB Bros or join our Patreon and post in the Discord. But yeah, I'm just trying to see like who people would most disagree with. But yeah, maybe Sherrone Moore would be one of those. Maybe Michigan fans or just people in general put more stock into kind of his leadership last year.
Right.
But okay. Anyway, thanks for checking out this episode of the College Football Bros. We'll be back in a couple of days with the ranking all 16 coaches in the SEC. And then after that, it'll be the top 15 coaches nationally. So be sure you're subscribed and we'll talk to you soon.